Welcome to part two of our series, Forging a President, looking at the time that Teddy Roosevelt spent in the Dakota Badlands, where he played a cowboy, he arrested boat thieves, and he did all manner of things that he claimed later made him the man that he was. In the last episode, we looked at some of those things that he was able to accomplish later in his life, such as being shot in the chest in 1912, and then being able to go on and deliver a speech for 90 minutes. In this episode, we're going to be looking at the run-up to events that caused him to move out to the Badlands in the first place. The first major event is what he called the day the light went out, and it happened in 1844. It began when Theodore Roosevelt was clutching two telegrams and shifting uncomfortably in a train. He was leaning forward, tapping his foot, and trying to hurry on the frustratingly slow steam engine. Roosevelt was a man at the time in his life with a lot going for him. He had a beautiful wife, a new baby, and a brilliant political career ahead of him. Also, the patronage and wealth of an aristocratic family. But all of this seemed in danger. The young assemblyman from Albany was making his way 145 miles south of Manhattan, where his wife and his mother both lay dying. On a clear day, the train ride from Albany to Manhattan took 5 hours, but a heavy fog had been hovering over New York for days, seeming to portend what lay ahead for him. Teddy Roosevelt tapped his foot impatiently and stared at the telegram. "You have a baby girl. Congratulations." But the second telegram told a different story. "Come at once. Mother and Alice gravely ill." The light went out for Roosevelt that day as he ran for the train. The man who valued action above all else could do nothing but wait to be delivered to destiny. Roosevelt stared out the window. The fog reminded him of when he was a boy and he would sleep sitting straight up because his asthma squeezed his small chest. On such nights, his father would take him out in his carriage. They would ride like the wind through the streets of New York. "Open your mouth, Teddy, open your mouth," his father instructed. "Let the air in." And as in a primitive oxygen ventilator, he would open his mouth and feel the cool air go down his throat and inflate his lungs. The image of a man frantically driving a black rain-slick carriage through the night streets of New York and a boy hanging off the side with his mouth open to the heavens, it was all his father could do after walking up and down the hallway with him all night. The rich man's son could get no air and his father could only admonish the boy to open his mouth while he sped the horses savagely along. "Faster, faster," he'd say, "for my son must breathe." Now the train was pulling into the Grand Central Station. The young dandy ran for his home in a fog so thick he could only grope his way toward 57th Street, where the Roosevelt Mansion commanded the street. Finally, he ran up the stairs to where his young wife Alice lay in bed. She was dying of Bright's disease, an affliction of the kidneys causing fever, vomiting, terrible back pain, and bloody urine. They had just married 3.5 years before, but now the love of his life was dying in his arms. They had recited poetry and written love letters to each other. Alice Hathaway Lee was a young beauty of a prominent Boston family who had fallen in love with the man with thick glasses and teeth that snapped words in half. Alice was just 17 when Roosevelt first saw her on October 18, 1878. He said, "As long as I live, I shall never forget how sweetly she looked and how prettily she greeted me." He had found his true love and often walked the 6 miles from Harvard to Chestnut Hill to see her. His grades fell as he courted her with rides in the woods and long days spent reciting poetry. He asked her to marry him his junior year, and after an arduous courtship, he won her. But now, in a way Roosevelt couldn't imagine, she was leaving him. Roosevelt hit his knees and held his wife. Bright's disease, combined with complications from childbirth, was robbing the world of Alice Lee, and in the late 19th century, there was little anyone could do. The fog outside the window was so heavy, it was as if the world was cloaked in a thick blanket. "What can I do for you, my love?" he said. "Teddy," she was very weak now. "Teddy," she repeated. The long labor had robbed her of any fight, and Roosevelt saw clearly she was moribund. At that precise moment, he heard a voice from outside the room that belonged to his brother, Elliot. "Teddy, come at once if you want to see mother one last time." It was Elliot who declared, on realizing his mother and sister-in-law were dying on the same day, "There is a curse on this house." It was the same house in which he had helplessly watched his father writhe in agony from stomach cancer years before. The same sense of helplessness possessed the two brothers now. Men of action could do nothing against the primitive state of medical science at the time. Roosevelt reluctantly left his barely conscious wife and rushed downstairs to see his mother. Mittie Roosevelt was dying of typhoid fever. There were no antibiotics, and 1 in 10 people died from complications stemming from the symptoms of 104-degree fever and chronic diarrhea. At age 48, Mittie was still a southern beauty with a cream-white complexion and dark glossy hair. She barely recognized Teddy as he knelt down and held her hand. Even now, he could scarcely believe that just 7 hours earlier, he had been leading a reform movement in the halls of Albany a young crusader with a brilliant political future and a wife and new baby. Kneeling there in his suit pants with dirty cuffs and hair tussled from the humidity and 6 hours on a train, Roosevelt felt at a complete loss. Could this be his mother, whom he so depended on? And could that really be his wife, who lit up his world in a way he never thought possible? Could she really be leaving him in this dark, fog-soaked world to forge ahead by himself? He had a daughter, but where was she? How would he raise her? No answers came. Theodore Roosevelt simply couldn't think anymore as he ran back and forth between the two dying women in that long night. At 3 o'clock in the morning, his mother, Martha Stewart, or Mitty Roosevelt, died. The fog didn't lift. Roosevelt then devoted himself to holding his semi-comatose wife and willing her back to health. Will, will, will. This was his mantra. He had beaten back death with it. He had pushed through life as a sickly child with it, and she must do the same. But Alice Lee wasn't her husband and barely clung to life through the morning. The fog lifted briefly, then the rain came, followed by the sun, and clear, cool air poured down from the northeast. Roosevelt cradled Alice Lee and refused to give up hope, but it was all for nothing. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon on February 14, 1884, Alice Hathaway Lee, the mother of his first child, died. Teddy Roosevelt had lost his second light of his life and could see only darkness. He stumbled through the funeral. Some said he was like a child now, and they worried about his sanity. He seemed dazed and unable to think. He gave his newborn daughter to his sister, and when the last funeral had passed, Roosevelt headed back to Albany to throw himself into his work as the reforming politician. "I have never believed it did any good to flinch or yield for any blow," he wrote later. "Nor does it lighten the pain to cease from working. Indeed, I think I should go mad if I were not employed." Roosevelt had always been an insomniac, and now he slept even less. He had taken on the corrupt bosses of Tammany Hall, but this blow made that look like nothing. He didn't sleep. People had heard him pacing back and forth. No one was allowed to mention his wife or mother. People worried he might just collapse or have a nervous breakdown. Roosevelt didn't collapse, but his political career did. He literally worked around the clock as an assemblyman and as a chairman of the city investigating committee. He split his time between New York and Albany, rewriting a 15,000-word investigative report on corruption during hearings in Albany. "He feels the awful loneliness more and more," his sister Corrine wrote to his brother Elliot, "and I fear he sleeps little or he walks a great deal in the night." Roosevelt introduced 9 bills relating to his findings and submitted 2 more reports of 1 million words of testimony. He was a man running from himself as he headed to the Republican National Convention in Chicago. As if to actualize his feelings of isolation from the world, he joined the Mugawump faction of his own party against the nominee, James G. Blaine. Roosevelt's candidate, George F. Edmunds, lost to Blaine, and Roosevelt was seen as a traitor. When all was lost and the Stop Blaine movement collapsed, the Mugwumps then slunk around to support Grover Cleveland, the Democratic nominee, and demanded Roosevelt join them. Roosevelt equivocated and considered abandoning the Republican Party. He further alienated Republicans by telling a reporter from the Evening Post that rather than vote for Blaine, he would give hearty support to any decent Democrat. After the reform movement was handed a resounding defeat, Roosevelt found no more interest in politics or anything else for that matter. He was going one place and one place only. He was going to the South Dakota Territory, that unsettled swath of country where Indians roamed and men with 6-shooters settled scores. In a letter to the editor of the Utica Herald, he confessed his wariness with politics, not life, and his ambivalence about the future. He said, "I wish to write you a few words just to thank you for your old kindness toward me. Although not a very old man, I have yet lived a great deal of my life, and I have known sorrow too bitter and joy too keen to allow me to become either cast down or elated for more than a brief period. I have very little expectation of being able to keep on in politics. I feel both tired and restless. For the next few months, I shall probably be in Dakota."